Okay, April 9th. That's, will be a joint meeting with the House Revenue Committee. So that should run probably from 2 to 4:30 or so. And the issue will be, you've got a series of bills, three in the House, one in your committee here, dealing with adjusting the corporate apportionment formula to increase the sales tax. So there's four bills all dealing with that theme. So that's a major policy issue for you. And then also the chair, remind you, announced yesterday that beginning next week, which would be Tuesday, you'll begin meeting at 8:10 instead of 8:30. So to get through your agenda.
That means 8:20 instead of 8:45.
I thought that meant we gotta start about 8:30. All right, anything else? Well, let's go ahead and get started. I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 299. We've had this one up before. Transportation, this must be a Mr. Yates.
I'd wait, Mr.
And I have three people signed up, but they, I think, looks like you're together. Dan Harrington, Steve Vargo, and Steve Johnson. How about if I get all three of you up there? You wanna start us off, Dick?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Dick Yates with Legislative Revenue. Just to remind you where you were, you have the bill before you, which extends the authority of both waymasters and motor carrier officers to make certain arrests and to issue citations with the same authority as a police officer. These are related to the movement of heavy vehicles. You also have before you, and have not as yet adopted, the Dash One amendments, which limit this increased authority to waymasters in terms of their ability to make arrests. But they do extend to the motor carrier enforcement officers the increased authority to issue citations.
Okay, who wants to start?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Johnston. I'm manager of the Motor Carrier Transportation. I'm with the, well, my boss get mad about that. I'm a manager of field services for the Motor Carrier Transportation Division, and I'm here basically to support Senate Bill 299. What this bill does is it allows motor carrier enforcement officers, which work for the Department of Transportation, issue citations for four offenses that in the past they did not have the authority to issue by statute. Three of those items, which are driving a commercial motor vehicle without a commercial driver's license, driving with a suspended commercial driver's license, and failing to use traction devices, currently are enforced by motor carrier enforcement officers. However, they're enforced under federal motor carrier safety regulations. The fourth item is new, and that is for failing to pay appropriate truck registration fees. Basically, what the bill does is says that a motor carrier enforcement officer can issue a citation under statute for driving without a commercial driver's license, and that's a Class B traffic violation. Or they can issue a citation for driving with a suspended CDL. Again, it's, in this case, it's a Class A traffic infraction, and they can issue a citation for failure to use traction devices or chains as required by law, and that's a Class C violation, and failing to pay for appropriate truck registration fees, Class D violation. The reason for the first three is being requested is because currently other law enforcement agencies issue these citations under statute. And a good example would be is we could be working with the state police of enforcing chain laws, and we're writing a violation under federal motor carrier safety regulations. State police are writing it under statute. When the judge hears the cases, there's two different bails. There's two different charges for, in essence, the same violation. So this is to try to provide uniformity. The fourth item, which is for the registration fees, is something that we have not had the authority to enforce in the past, but it is an issue of where people are underpaying their registration fees, and nobody is really actively enforcing it, and we are the logical organization to enforce it because we weigh trucks, so we know if they're under declaring their weights or not. There's a perception by some motor carriers and drivers that if they register their vehicle for less than 26,000 pounds, they don't fall under the CDL requirements, which means they don't have to have a CDL license, they don't need a medical card, and they're exempt from Oregon's weight mile tax. And basically, that's not accurate, but there's this perception out there that, they don't have to meet these requirements. So in essence, this would allow us to issue a citation for those folks and get the appropriate tax, and also get rid of this misconception that you're avoiding regulatory requirements by under-declaring your vehicles. In summary, this bill will make motor care enforcement officers issue citations the same as other police organizations, and it will also help make sure that the state is getting the appropriate registration fees.
Mr. Johnson, with the exception of that fourth point, it sounds like, if I'm hearing you correctly, that you're already issuing the citations just under different authority, and this is to clear it up for the courts?
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, the answer to that question is, except for the fourth item, that is correct.
Okay. Any questions of Mr. Johnson? All righty.
Good morning, gentlemen, senators. My name is Dan Harrington. I'm a senior motor carrier enforcement officer with 18 years of service. I'm here with testimony against removal of arrest authority for Oregon's motor carrier enforcement officers. Of the approximately 105 personnel in our agency, removal of arrest authority is supported by a very small minority within our agency. My estimation would be 3 or 4 people, those people probably being management persons, none of whom have ever performed our duties. With all due respect, prior testimony of people supporting removal of arrest authority, this committee needs to know these people have spent very little, if in fact, any time on the highways, excuse me, in rural isolated areas at odd hours, performing my job duties in my circumstances, alone, unarmed with a radio with maybe a state trooper within 20 or 30 miles. This practical perspective casts a very different light on this issue from my side. We are alone and we are unarmed. We need every tool, real or perceived, that we can have to make our job duties both safe and efficient. Prior testimony spoke of expanded authority, having motor carrier enforcement officers deal with criminal violations. We already do issue criminal citations under ORS 818-400 and 818-040. Any criminality that Sergeant Curtis or Captain Spirip of the OSP expressed concerns about our new authority is a moot point because we already do that. This new legislation changes nothing as far as our job duties are concerned. Last year, I personally issued 5 criminal citations, and I've already issued another 6 this year under present authority. My co-workers in my area, motor carrier enforcement officers, have issued dozens this year. The new authority changes nothing with what we already do on the highways. While working on the highways, I personally had to disarm a drug-crazed gunman shooting at invisible people, subsequently calling for OSP assistance, and have encountered an escaped fugitive, also notifying OSP dispatch for assistance. I cannot definitively say that arrest authority helped me in these and many other potentially critical situations, but the fact is this authority exists and is in the minds of people. No one can say how many times an individual took no action against a motor carrier enforcement officer knowing this authority exists. This can't be measured, and that needs to be recognized. Personnel safety needs to be paramount with any decision by the legislature. Removal of such authority can only be detrimental to the safety of MCEO personnel. There are no positives in removing this authority. I urge you to appreciate the work environment in which I and others exist in and leave the arrest authority for MCEOs intact. And I thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir. Questions?
I'm thoroughly confused now.
Yeah.
Okay. Thoroughly confused.
Senator Minnis?
Well, I guess I need to understand what arrest authority you guys have currently and where that authority is in statute.
The arrest authority is in statute. I believe it is 818-530, but I don't know offhand. Do you have that information? It is 810-530.
810-530.
Yes, Senator, that's correct.
Can we get a copy of that statute?
It looks like he's going that way.
There are also many other references within the Oregon statute where it says a motor carrier enforcement officer may issue a citation or arrest as a police officer does. That's mentioned at least another half.
Are you guys in PERS?
Yes, sir.
Or you know, police and fire?
No, we're not, Senator.
Mr. Harrington, I want to make sure between Ms. Johnson and I understand correctly. There's no issue with the ability to issue a citation. The question is the arrest authority.
Mr. Embar, the answer is correct. That is the correct answer. The Attorney General's office has stated that we still can stop detain.
And I guess, Mr. Harrington, I'd ask you to comment on, I believe Senator Minnis at our last meeting raised the concern whether motor carrier enforcement officers had the adequate training to handle the arrest and were being unarmed. Whether what the risk would be, it was more a concern for safety of the enforcement officers.
Okay, right here, we are not advocating that we do physical arrests. All we are advocating is that the authority remain intact because it is, as I said, real or perceived in the minds of individuals. We have no intention of violating our policy established by our management not to do that. However, the fact that it exists is not detrimental to our safety and efficiency with our job because people out there know that we have this arrest authority. And once again, you know, it cannot be measured how many times person did not take some type of physical action, perhaps against the motor carrier enforcement officer, just knowing that we do have arrest authority.
Senator Corcoran and Senator Minnis.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to make it clear, though, the bill is about citation authority.
Correct.
It's not about arrest authority.
That is correct. However, from what I have read...
Hold on, Mr. Harrington, just a second, please.
Sorry.
Go ahead, what were you saying?
Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Corcoran. I think the confusion is that Senate Bill 299 is written does nothing about taking away arrest. I think there is an issue that there might be out there a dash one amendment that would take it out, but I have not seen it. So
okay.
I can't speak to that.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, dealing with the issue before us right now is basically to put the citation authority in state statute that you're already utilizing three of the four instances that you're already utilizing under federal authority.
Vice Chair, Senator Corcoran, correct.
Okay, thanks.
And yes, Senator Corcoran, if I may, I apologize for not being clear that it wasn't referenced to the Dash 1 Amendment in my testimony.
Okay.
Let me be real clear. Mr. Johnson, the Dash 1 Amendments, it's been a while since we heard this last time. Are these the ones that after our discussion, this committee asked to have prepared to take away the arrest authority?
Senator Byron, I believe those are the ones that you requested to be produced. I have never seen them.
Okay, so you're not in the department, didn't request these, is not necessarily in support of them.
Senator Byron, as I understand it, the request was made based on testimony of OSP.
Okay, I'm sorry. Senator.
Okay, a little clarification. The current statute, which in essence is the first paragraph of the bill, you have the authority to arrest for any crime that occurs in your presence.
Yes.
Under current statute.
For which we are authorized to enforce.
Right. Okay. Well, actually, okay, it says the section applies to the following offenses, with the list of offenses here.
Right.
For any of those that occur in your presence. You just cannot make any
That's correct,
cause sense. Arrest. You can't go out and investigate and take statements from individuals and issue a citation based on the statements like of police officers.
That's absolutely correct, Senator. It is stipulated in statute what we may enforce.
Right, and the Dash 1 amendments restrict the arrest power, to just those things listed in subsection 3 specifically. See, I guess that's where a little bit of confusion might be. Because subsection 3 is the enumeration of the various things that they're adding.
These weren't added, though. These aren't added. This is sub 3. These are already existing. Right? Yeah. This is all they're adding is the may arrest under ORC.
Right. Right. So. Well, okay. I'm fine with the bill as it is.
Without the amendment?
Offload the Dash 1 amendment.
Okay.
Okay.
Since it was yours, I'm assuming they're not going to get moved then. Your turn.
Good morning. Morning, Senators. My name is Stephen A. Bargle, and I'm a motor carrier enforcement officer. Been with the Department of Transportation for the last 14 years. My work site is up at the Woodburn Port of Entry, which is on I-5 heading south, and I'm sure many of you have driven freeway and seen the number of trucks that come in. And my main concern is, as well as my fellow officers, is about Sergeant Curtis's comments about our arrest authority as written in Oregon law, ORS 810-530. Arrest means to bring to a stop, to make inactive, the act of stopping, the condition of being stopped or inactive. ORS 818-400, failure to comply, failure to move to right lane for way in motion, failure to remain standing, failure to stop and weigh, all criminal offenses, and the violator must appear in court. In order for us to have an effective size and weight program, we must be able to do all those in the above mentioned. Since this is a criminal offense, would a violator be able to question the legality of a citation issued by a MCO without arrest authority? Also, would a violator question any citation he or she would receive for any violation under law? As per Senate Bill 299 gives the MCOs more authority to issue citations. Why would OSP be concerned about our arrest authority? By policy, we cannot make physical arrests. OSP is already shorthanded and may be in the future even smaller. Since we call them for assistance for anything requiring possible arrests, why would they be concerned about the extra responsibility as in Senate Bill 299? On numerous occasions, OSP has been called and asked for our assistance to stop a vehicle and to make inactive until an officer has arrived. I believe if we do not have this authority, we will lose all credibility with the industry. The MCO's responsibility is to protect the motoring public and its infrastructure from unsafe commercial vehicles. I believe to take away the authority from MCOs would jeopardize our authority to do in our enforcement effectively, which could result in millions of dollars lost to the state and can cause problems for its officers. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, committee?
I still have questions.
I was just going to say, your statement about not being able to make physical custody arrests, I think, is an error. Because I think even under the existing statute, where someone doesn't cooperate during the course of issuing a citation, general police officer authority allows you to take someone into custody who, for instance, doesn't produce the identification necessary to fill out the forms for a limited duration period of time. So unless there's something else that takes that away from you, it seems to me that you would have physical custody arrest authority. I think with the expansion of the
physical custody
I think with the addition of the violations that are being put into this statute by virtue of 299, that expands that. So I think you do have the power to do physical custody arrest, which may be where some of the concern is. Physical custody arrest, to the extent that you're attempting to issue a citation for any of the violations listed in the statute and for the limited purpose of identifying the person to which you're going to give the citation to. So, I think you do, because it talks about general arrest authority for the purposes of these particular violations. Unless we could find some other research that would tell me that's not true. So.
Senator Starr?
Dash one amendments, we haven't explained to me how they differ in respect to the bill as introduced. I still see arrest authority on line 5 of the dash one amendments. May arrest, says, or issue a citation for the offense. That appears also on line 6 of the printed bill. It's not clear to me what we were getting at with the dash one amendments and what the real change is as regards.
Excellent.
Any
Counselor Dick try to explain that?
Basically, the amendments changed the wording so that the extension of the arrest authority is limited to waymasters. And when you separate out then the language which relates to motor carrier enforcement,
all right,
they're taken out of the arrest portion but continue in the citation section.
Clear. It's very clear. Thank you. Appreciate the explanation.
All right. Senator Minnis, do you have any additional comment before we let these witnesses stand down?
I have a further question, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What I'm hearing in the testimony is that you're, by policy, not doing physical arrests.
Correct, sir.
And that changes really the application of the statute by policy, and you are by policy then asking OSP to intervene in cases where physical arrest is required.
So we do not stand. That's correct.
Believe I understand it.
Okay. Senator Miss, do you have additional questions?
Well, it's actually the construction of this thing is fairly interesting because the current law refers to 8104.10, which is the general arrest and citation authority for police officers. And it's interesting because it kind of even goes beyond some of the areas we've been talking about here. So,
construction of the amendment or the original bill?
Even though the original language right now, I'm a little bit confused about what their physical custody authority arrest is because part of that statute says a police officer, which includes me, shall not arrest a person for a traffic violation. But I do know there's another authority in the law that allows for the arrest of a person for a limited duration period of time for occasions. So.
Mr. Johnson wants to attempt to answer that.
Senator Beyer, Senator Minnis, the way we've always interpreted the statute is that there is arrest authority under those items that are specifically listed.
Mm-hmm.
But by policy, and I've been there for over 10 years, we have never allowed arrest mm-hmm. by policy. It is always just the opposite. You will not arrest. If there is a situation that were to come up, giving an example, let us say that a driver, when you're trying to issue him a citation, says, I'm not going to stay here, and gets in his vehicle and leaves, we call OSP. We do not try to detain that person against their will. And if OSP doesn't get them, I guess we've lost them. But on the other hand, in many cases, you already have the driver's license, and you definitely have the license plate number on the truck. Last session, a bill was introduced that was encompassing of a number of things, and one of those was a department request to remove arrest authority. And the reason that was put in there was because having arrest authority did not change how we function, whether it's in there or out of there. And about 5 years ago, we terminated an officer, and the reason the officer was terminated is he tried to arrest somebody. The argument at that time, and it was in arbitration, I believe, that the officer said, I have statutory authority, the ability to arrest. The individual did not win the arbitration. The arbitrator said we have the right to limit, despite what the statute says, to limit what we allow our people to do. You know, we have the right to have the ground rules. Since that time, we have not had any instances of people trying to abuse, I guess, the arrest authority that is granted by statute. But it is by policy that they don't arrest. But that's what happened 2 years ago. This is not our amendment, the dash one, for all practical purposes, whether it's in or out of the law, it is not going to change how we function. People will not be allowed to arrest, and anybody, any officer, and if under our procedures, who even infers to somebody, I'll arrest you, is in violation of policy. But so it, if it, well, it brings it basically into compliance, if the dash one would basically bring it into compliance of what actual policy is. The dash one does not pass, for all practical purposes, it probably won't have a great impact on us, because we're still not going to allow a physical arrest to occur.
Senator Mess?
Well, okay, would you tell me when does the arrest occur? And let me give you an example. One of your motor carrier officers is attempting to issue a citation that they have the authority to issue, and the person gets back in their car and starts it up. And your motor carrier officer says, you cannot leave. I'm going to issue the citation. Is that or is that not an arrest?
Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Menas, according to the Attorney General's office, we have the right to detain in order to write a citation,
right,
without even if we do not have arrest authority.
Okay. But give me the situation where the person was fired. What was it? More than, was it handcuffing someone? Was it?
Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Menas, what happened in this particular situation is that a driver was not doing what the officer wanted him to do. He asked them to provide paperwork, and he refused to do that. And he then went to a Coke machine in another building. Our officer followed him, and after he had said, if you leave, you're under arrest, he followed him up to that Coke machine and said, you're under arrest, and he actually grabbed his hand, and then a scuffle occurred, and the whole scuffle occurred because the driver thought he was trying to arrest him, and the policy was violated, and the individual was given a dismissal letter, and it went to arbitration, and the arbitrator said, yes, he violated the policy.
Yes, yeah,
an argument.
Yeah, interesting. I think the whole statutory scheme here is just completely confusing because the detaining the person under this authority is an arrest. Actually, it might be something we might want to look at in the Judiciary Committee because in one sense it says police officer may not arrest, which to me infers you're actually taking the person into physical custody and turning them over to the county sheriff to be lodged in a jail or taking them to a place where they're going to be booked, which is what happens in Portland. Under this authority, they detain them, they put handcuffs on them, they take them to the county jail, they have photographs and fingerprints of that person taken, they hold on to that person until they get positive identification. Once they do that, they issue the citation and the guy walks out the door. That's a detention. So, it's interesting to me, the difference between an arrest and a detention. See, the detention's always been construed in my mind as something that's for a limited duration period of time, but in fact, it would rise to the level of being a physical custody arrest for the purpose of civil rights violations and so on and so forth. So, I mean, I think you guys are out in Never Never Land as far as how you're treating, maybe it's not you guys, it's how the state statutes are treating these individuals that have a limited police officer authority. It's kind of getting this problem where we try to create these hybrid police officers in state agencies and stuff. It's pretty ridiculous, in my opinion. And I think we do it to try to avoid actually training people and actually, making sure that they understand civil rights laws and arrest authority and so on and so forth. So I just...
Mr. Jones?
This thing's a mess.
Senator Mears, the chair's hoping that you're not going to try and solve that.
I would recommend you simply move the bill and take this whole issue up. If I can find a vehicle somewhere in the Judiciary Committee, I'd like to start looking at this a little bit. It also would require, I think, some dialogue with the governor's office about, what their direction would be in terms of how they want to treat these particular individuals. But
perhaps with the Attorney General. Senator George.
Well, I think we need to remember that in 400.25, that statement is made, under no circumstances shall this authority be utilized. Now, I want to give you guys a parallel on this, and I want you to picture a Services Children Family person going to the door and making an arrest of a parent. They don't do that. There's a reason for it. You want a uniformed officer with you because of the fact that you're the person making the decision that there's a problem, and you need somebody who has a little higher level of authority, maybe removed from that circumstance to actually make the arrest. Most of the time, if you tell somebody to stay there, they're going to stay there. Okay? Very rarely, my understanding is, conversations we've had, do any of these people ever drive out? So First of all, you got every bit of data on them, and they're not going very far, very long, and you're going to have them, and you're going to be fleeing the violation and everything else. I don't think you want to put our, we folks, any inspectors or anything like that in the Department of Motor Carrier in a position to be actually doing that arrest. I think it changes the dynamics dramatically, and everybody told you guys the stories about California with blowing up a weigh station and actually taking a truck and physically driving through them. We have a different kind of environment in Oregon, and that is when you come in and you have a problem with a truck, our attitude should be to get you legal and get you back on the road. We don't want to get into a confrontational type of dynamic in which our officers are not only making a decision about the safety of the truck, but are then actually going to take somebody into physical custody. I think that's explosive. Now, I'm going to tell you, I've been out on that highway and with the trucks because I'm CDL licensed, and most of those guys are packing guns. You just don't want to take a chance of having our people. I mean, you're either going to have to fully uniform them with all the protection they need and guns, or you're going to leave them in the position of saying, listen, you're breaking the law. You know you're not going to get away with it. And so if you decide to leave, there's going to be consequences to it. But keep them out of that actual physical arrest.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Senators, anybody else who wishes to testify? I thought so.
Good morning, Mr. Vice Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kirk Curtis, and I'm a sergeant with the Oregon State Police. One of the reasons that we brought this amendment up is due to our concern. We are being cut back in force numbers. Our availability to respond, to assist the Waymasters, is getting farther and farther away because the patrol is being limited in numbers and where they're actually working and where they're trying to accomplish their jobs. These gentlemen work out. I don't envy their jobs, because they work out generally in remote areas, away from towns. Many of the scales are many, many miles outside on highways, this type of thing. Generally, they're operating on their own. They're not calling in or telling people who they have stopped at the time. We want to avoid confrontational situations where there's any implication where somebody may be detained. They're not armed. They don't carry capstan. They don't receive training. Now, if I may answer or refer to Senator Menace when he was asked, saying that he had people in Portland that do place them in handcuffs. There are waymasters that are deputy sheriffs. They've gone through all the training with firearms, capstan, arrest techniques, and this type of thing, and part of their assignment is to work the way stations and scales. This dash one of midnight would not take their arrest authority away from them. Where we're concerned is where we have a number of people out there that do not have the training, they're in remote areas, and if there's any confrontational situation, regardless if they call OSP or not, more than likely our response time is going to be 30 to 40 minutes away. In 30 to 40 minutes, a lot can happen. Contrary to a statement made, my firm belief is that the word will get out amongst the truckers that basically these people have citation authority, there's no arrest situation. By expanding their authority and putting it in with the state motor vehicle code, you also give them arrest authority with people that are suspended for homicide, more serious crimes and situations, and it expands their vulnerability, if I may, with regards to confrontational situations with these people, because more than likely these people already know that they're suspended. They have the upper hand on the waymaster or who they're talking to, and in most cases or situations, if they go to drive off, they haven't run a computer check, as we do as officers, to find out what the status of the person is, run criminal history checks and everything that we do from the initial stop. Our officers, when they stop a car, they're radioing the location, the license number of the vehicle. All of a sudden, our people in dispatch are making contacts as to who the car belongs to, whether it's stolen, and is trying to build a history on that vehicle from the very beginning in the background. Waymasters, on the other hand, have a truck come up, go across the scale, or they're on patrol. They're going to the scales or coming back from the scales. This authority gives them the ability to stop a vehicle en route, which they have at this time for violation that they observe, and they're in a confrontational situation or a situation where they're stopping a vehicle out in the middle of nowhere. We may not know where they're at. So just concerns that we have with regards to putting a situation out where you're given arrest authority and it's a known authority. We would like to see it developed with the policy. Yes, the incident down in Ashland was unfortunate. It became a knockdown, drag-out situation down there, and that was the one 5 years ago that Mr. Johnson was referring to. And it was one of these situations. A lot of people were involved by the time it ended. But our feeling is on this is that we're becoming lower and lower in numbers. Our response time is becoming greater and greater. We don't have the training out there, as Senator Menes had mentioned. They're not trained at this time for these situations. They're not trained in handling. They don't have arrest authority, or they don't have handcuffs. They don't have capstan. They don't have weapons. They're vehicles. If they go to detain anybody, any place, they have no place to put them. There's not cage facilities, as far as I know, or do they have secure facilities at any of the ports of entry?
That's true.
Senator Corcoran?
Well, I think you're repeating some of the testimony you gave earlier. It seems like there's a conflict between two state agencies. It's kind of interesting. It's playing out in a committee. It seems like they should get together between the time that we send this bill out and it gets over to the House. I would suggest we go to work session. Senator Menes suggested get the bill out. And if they want to try to get their acts together, the two agencies, on their way over to the House, that'd be great.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's a conflict between the two agencies. Can we get somebody back up?
I believe what I'm hearing the officer say, as well as Mr. Johnson, is that the current policy is working. You just wouldn't want to see it expanded.
Exactly.
Confused.
If I may, Mr.
So it's working. I mean, and there, as I understand Mr. Johnson's testimony today and the previous time, is there is no intent by the department to change the law. They have a policy in place that they intend to enforce, and the bill, as it was originally drafted, didn't change anything. That was where they intended to be.
If I may respond, Mr. Vice Chair, policy is something that can be taken away with a stroke of a pen by anybody in the agency. The current administration is upholding this policy, and it's one that's been with the agency for several years. By putting it into statute, it continues that policy where we've had very limited numbers of contacts or problems.
This is for the Department of Transportation. Where is your authority in law to restrict authority granted by statute?
Mr. Vice Chair and Senator Menes, I can't tell you exactly where it is in law, but we have been told by the State Attorney General's office that we have the ability to say what our employees can do and can't do. And I would suggest that perhaps, let's say you are a police officer assigned to traffic, whoever that organization would be, the policing agency, who's that person's supervisor, would have the ability to say, no, you're not going to investigate murder charges. I mean, they have a limit.
Mr. Chairman, that is not true for general law enforcement agencies. My agency that I work for tells me how I conduct an investigation of a state statute or violation of law. They do not tell me I cannot investigate that. So the question is, when the legislature grants a specific authority to do something, what power does an agency have to overturn or constrain the grant of that authority? In other words, I understand what you're saying in terms of how you administer the law, but I don't know that you have the power anywhere in statute to say you cannot do what the legislature has empowered you to do.
Mr. Vice Chairman, Senator Menes, I guess my response to that would be, if there is no place in statute, then the -1 amendments are really needed, because what that would say is that we could not, even though our people are not trained, we could not stop our people from trying to arrest people.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't want to hold the bill up. I think we should move the bill. I'm going to look into this myself a little bit more, because it's one of those things, like getting these discussions in judiciary about with district attorneys, where is your authority to not prosecute a case? Well, it doesn't exist. Constitution actually tells prosecutors they will prosecute. In fact, it says shall prosecute from time to time what the legislature directs you to prosecute. And then we construct statutes telling you what the parameters of those things are. There's nothing in statute anywhere that gives DAs discretion, yet we continue to do these things. So it's interesting to me that if the legislature says that this person has the power and authority to do X, and then you're, as an agency director or manager, are limiting that authority the legislature granted, there must be something in there. Because the power emanates from the Constitution and the legislature. It doesn't emanate from agency directors.
Senator Menes, the chair is inclined to move to work session and move the bill and suggest that when it gets to the House side, that maybe it go to the Judiciary Committee over there.
Actually, I think it would be a good idea.
I think that's a great idea. Is there anybody else who would like to testify this morning? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. Open the work session on Senate Bill 299.
Let's move this puppy.
Senator Minnis moves Senate Bill 299 to the floor with a due pass. Any discussion?
Without gas, one time ago.
Okay. Is there anybody else? Let the record show that Senator George votes no. Senate Bill 299 is passed on the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Minnis, would you carry this one?
Very well.
Okay, we will now move, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2132. Mr. Yates.
Mr. Chair, this bill deals with registration period primarily for automobiles, but also motorcycles and some other vehicles, certain electric vehicles, mopeds. Where one of these vehicles is newly licensed for the first time, they would convert to a four-year registration period. The intent here is to reduce the number of times, essentially, that people have to renew their registration and the number of people, the workload, essentially, for DMV. The group here is actually bifurcated in terms of when this takes effect. Vehicles that are in a airshed area where you have pollution control, air quality control, is delayed. The reason for that, as I understand, is that there will be a revision of the way in which DEQ meets federal standards for air quality, and that's down the road a ways. And the effect of, let me back up for a second, the effect of a four-year registration period on inspection of vehicles is that you do not inspect those vehicles in the second to fourth year. In other words, they come out new. They're new vehicles. Under current law, they would have to go through a vehicle inspection at the end of 2 years when they re-register the vehicle. Now they'll be registered for 4 years, so the first inspection will be at age four. And by delaying the implementation of this for until 2004, it allows the DEQ essentially to go through again their model and their the way in which they will meet the air quality standards, given that they don't look at those cars between 2 and 4 years of age.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Yates? So effectively, what we're doing is we're just saying when you buy a new car, you get a four-year license.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I did that already up in the public hearing, but Kelly, you're on.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Taylor with the Department of Transportation, and we did request this bill to be filed. And between Mr. Yates and the chair, you've pretty much given my testimony, and I would ask the committee to support the bill. it is simply just that. For the non-DEQ counties, they would begin January 1, 2002. The DEQ counties, they're listed in my testimony, Multnomah, Clackamas, etc., they would start January 1, 2004. We have worked very closely with DEQ on this bill. They are in support of the bill. It does give them time, as Vic said, to adjust their 10-year model to be able to meet the EPA requirements. There's been no opposition to the bill. The bill passed unanimously by the House, both out of committee, out of House Transportation, and on the floor, and Senate General Government Transportation. I haven't been able to find a no vote yet, so I would ask the committee to support the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and open a work session on 2132.
Yes, I would like to move House Bill 2132 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves House Bill 2132 to the floor with a due pass.
It's the one that gets rid of the Portland Police Department.
2132.
Aye.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2132 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator George would like to carry the bill. Okay, we are now going to we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 685. Elizabeth.
these people have arrest authority, Elizabeth? That's all I want to know. They can arrest the ships.
Right. Mr. Chairman and committee members, with Senate Bill 685, what you have here is it's allowing a port district to levy a property tax for the purpose of providing revenue for law enforcement to a city or county in which the port is located. The port district tax rate cannot exceed its permanent tax rate limit. Now, as far as revenue impact, there is no direct revenue impact from this bill, because really this is just allowing a transfer of property tax revenue from a port to a city or county government, which is providing those law enforcement services. In 2001, there are basically 23 port districts in the state, and they imposed $10 million in property taxes from their permanent tax rate. And also, this is just revenue that would be generated from their permanent tax rate, is the amount that could be transferred to a city or local government. So in the future, what you would see with the passage of Senate Bill 685 is that there could be a transfer then in the future of port district tax revenue to cities and counties.
Mm-hmm. Questions of staff?
Questions, James.
Senator George?
Currently, are any port properties, anyone that goes in that port district, are they exempt then from a city or county tax? Because
Senator,
if they weren't, then they would be already paid for that police protection.
Senator George, they already pay, they pay a city rate and a county rate and a port rate.
Right.
So they pay for all of those. It's not changing any of that.
This could be like if they wanted to enhance services. In other words, we want more officers on the, down at the port.
Yeah, Senator George, this could be a way in which the port could enhance, you know, their ability to have additional law enforcement.
That would require a vote?
No, this is just... This is doing this statutorily. It's saying that they can use their funds now.
Oh, just how they use the
funds. Yeah, how they use their funds. And so it's not giving them any additional tax authority. It's just saying you can use your funds now if you'd like to transfer them to a city or county to provide additional law enforcement services.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Armstrong, representing the Oregon Ports Group. I can appreciate the questions that were just asked. This issue can appear a little bit more complicated, I think, on its face than it actually is. This is an issue that was driven by one particular port district, which is the Port of Brookings Harbor down in Curry County. The issue that arose was they apparently have some problems with getting county sheriff's office coverage down in the South County area. They're just understaffed. And so the port wondered, would there be any way that we could pass through some of our resources through an intergovernmental agreement or some other arrangement to the county to help beef up South County coverage? And the legal opinion that came back on that was no, you cannot, because under special district statute, you can only do those things that are expressly authorized in statute. So the purpose of this bill is to come back and say, yes, in fact, ports do have the authority to pass those resources on through to a city or a county to help pay for law enforcement services. Now, an important distinction here is that ports currently do have some law enforcement authority for properties that are owned and operated by the port. Port of Portland has the airport police, for example. This does not give ports additional law enforcement authority. It just purely says that within the boundary of the port district, they can pass through dollars to a county or a city to increase the coverage. So it's purely an authority issue, and we would encourage the committee's support of that clarification.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Armstrong?
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Castillo. I don't have a question as much as a comment. I really appreciate the local authorities there pulling a resource, seeing an opportunity to pull resources and partner together to figure out a solution for not being able to use the resources for this purpose now. So I think that's great you guys worked out a partnership to do this.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
We can pass this along without even...
Anybody else who wants to talk about ports?
Yeah, would you like to testify, sir? You look like you're lost. Can we help you?
It's a low volume day. Okay, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 685 and open the work session.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Castillo.
I would move that we adopt Senate Bill 685 and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Castillo moves Senate Bill 685 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. No discussion. Is there anybody opposed? Senate Bill 685 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation unanimously.
I'll carry it.
Senator Castillo wants to carry. We are done. Is there any other business, Mr. Warner, before the committee? The Revenue Committee is closed for the day. Well, Monday,